Committee members, I want to call the meeting to order. And committee members, I'm going to recess the meeting. We're going to have a brief time for at least a DFL caucus, and the Republicans are welcome to do the same. Thank you. Okay, committee members, thank you for your indulgence. The meeting is called back to order. And on the agenda today, we have one bill, House File 3678. And our intention today is to look at an amendment to this bill and have discussion and testimony about that and see where we go from there. So this is my bill, actually, and I'm just going to work from the chair here and explain the bill to you, what we're trying to do. So does everybody have House File 3678? And if you look in your packet, there should be the A1 amendment. So I'm going to move the A1 amendment be amended to 3678 to put it in the order that I need the bill to be discussed in. And that's what we're going to have our testimony on. So you can see it's a page 1, delete section 1. And what we do with this amendment is create something, a new program called the Challenge Program Bond Account. And this gives the agency permission. It's a permissive opportunity to establish a Challenge Program Bond Account as a separate account within the Housing Development Fund. And the proceeds of this would be spent in the same way that the Challenge Fund dollars are spent right now. And the way this is written, the as I understand it, the bonds would be sold by the Housing Finance Agency, and there would be, again, the usual up to 4 years for them to sell them. The debt would be up to $2.4 million annually. And the language here that says how that would be transferred and so on is all on page 1. And we ask the agency then to report to the chairs of both the majority minority ranking members of the committees what they're doing with this, with these dollars. Members, here's why this amendment is before you, and here's what I'm attempting to do. First of all, I think we are probably, at least some of us, really mourn the loss of the $10 million veto of dollars for public housing remodel and repair that happened a couple days ago under Governor Pawlenty's pen. What we're coming back here with is the opportunity to do some bonding in the way that a very popular program, I think, that we all know about, the Challenge Fund, would be able to use. With this up to $2.4 million, it could be two, could be less than two, could be somewhere in between, we would be releasing up around $30 million in bonding, according to this amendment, which then could be used for, again, all the purposes that the Challenge Fund has indicated for use in the past. And we would give those, it's an investment, I guess, in some people, as we were talking about it, we would ensure that there'd be at least those dollars available to be spent for housing in the next couple of years. One of the reasons for doing this is the really difficult problem we face in the next couple of years with a potential deficit in for our budget up to, I've heard, up to $8 billion. There's no guarantee that there will be any money left in either the Challenge Fund or many of the other programs left in the Housing Fund that are in the Housing Fund appropriations, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's appropriations right now. And so this is a way of holding on to and ensuring that we would have up to about $30 million in dollars to spend. And that's my rationale for going in this direction and seeing if we can't be creative with the dollars that we now have available to us this biennium. And again, this year, perhaps, because depending on what happens, that looks like might happen next year, we may not have any dollars to use for, certainly for debt service or even the other purposes that already exist under the challenge fund. One of the other things that we know is that creating, doing housing construction creates a lot of jobs. It really is a good investment in returning dollars to our economy. I remember there was a study done, I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, where we learned that the dollars invested in housing construction return to the economy within a year about half of what that cost was. It's an amazing return on investment that housing does. It puts people to work throughout the community. And one of the things about the way this is constructed is this is a statewide program that would allow us to see housing constructed and debt financing, those kinds of issues happening all over the whole state. I think I'll just, we've had testimony in the past about what the investment creates in terms of numbers of jobs and numbers of housing units. And so I think what I want to do is ask for some testimony from folks in the community who support this approach. And then we'll have an opportunity to hear from folks in the community who do not support this approach. I realize that this is a departure from the way we have dealt with some of the housing issues and legislation here in the House, and I'd like to have a discussion about that and not vote specifically on it today, but have the opportunity to think about it and come back at the next meeting and make a decision. And I guess my challenge to us all is to take some leadership and make sure that we don't just cut the housing budget, that we do something very creative. Representative Morgan, I saw your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate your willingness to hear, let us hear testimony today and ask some questions and then think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we adopted the A1 amendment, and that would get the bill in the order you want us to consider it, right? So maybe we ought to do that.
Okay.
And then hear the testimony as it relates to the bill as amended.
I think that's a good idea.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's just first take this motion. This is the usual motion of putting the bill in the order that the author intends.
Madam Chair,
Representative Severson,
can you explain a little bit the difference between the original bill, the intent of that, and
yes,
the amendment here?
Yes, thank you. The difference is that we are not asking the debt service to come out of the general fund. We are asking it to come out of the appropriated dollars that are in the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. That's the main difference. We're making it permissive that they may establish this challenge bond account, and if they do, then we want them to spend it in the ways that's consistent with the challenge fund. No further questions. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay, the motion prevails, and now the amendment is before us. So I'd like to take some testimony from all the different points of view that are out there. Let's see. What do we have? Mr. Arthur, Alan Arthur, would you like to come forward? And if any of you want to make sure we have your names, please feel free to volunteer as we go along here. And Mr. Voss, I see. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson Clark, committee members. My name is Alan Arthur, and I'm the president of AON. And AON is a nonprofit provider of affordable apartment homes for people in the state. We have done more apartment homes for homeless people in the state than any organization. We have about 1,706 apartments in the state of Minnesota. To start out with, I just sometimes, you know, I'm kind of a simple-minded guy, and I like to come back to the basics of why our organization exists. Not too long ago, somebody called down to my office and said, there's a guy here to see you. And I looked at my calendar, and there wasn't anything on it. So I said, so I'll send him down. And this real big guy comes walking down the steps. He was homeless. He pointed his finger at me and said, I heard on the streets that you're the man who could find me a place to live. I said, well, come on down. So we sat and we talked about what his situation was. And he asked me how long it would take him to get into one of our apartment homes for homeless people. And I turned to him and said, at least 9 months, maybe a year. And this big guy sat in front of me and cried. And when you work jobs like mine, you sometimes lose track that you're talking about human beings, people out there in our world who are looking for a simple thing, really. Home, And that's what we're trying to make happen more, make more possible for the citizens of our communities. You have here, I think, I think you have this map showing potential affordable housing properties, projects, developments that are across the state that are possible. About a third of these now have been funded, have been figured out. That means, though, two-thirds of them are sitting waiting to be figured out. And our hope is that we collectively, as a community, figure them out. Again, it's a simple thing in my mind: air, water, food, home. Home is pretty high on the need scale for our people, for each of us. And that's what we're trying to do. As Chairperson Clark mentioned earlier, it's also a jobs, a very important jobs piece to our community. John, the man I talked about earlier, he has worked a lot of jobs. And a lot of the folks who live in our housing work a lot of jobs, usually part-time, 20 hours, maybe two 20-hour jobs at a time, sometimes three, minimum wage. But right now, a lot of those aren't happening. A lot of those opportunities aren't there. And other folks who are going to come up here are going to talk more about the jobs piece, which, of course, is very important. I do want to mention one more thing before I get out of here, and that is that the leverage that was mentioned earlier, the money, it not only returns 50% of the money to the state, 50% of the total development costs approximately actually come from sources outside the state or from sources that aren't state monies or aren't public monies. So it's important to understand that it's leveraging at least twice as much money. It's not just spending it alone. So it's an important leverage piece, bringing in capital to our community when it needs it. So anything that you, the legislature, or that any of us can do to make housing more real, more possible for folks like John and for other folks in our community, the families in our community that need it, is appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. And why don't you just stay there? We'll hear from Mr. Voss, and then we'll sit there questions from committee members for either of you. Welcome to the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Kim Voss. I'm the housing director at Interfaith Outreach and Community Partners in Wayzata, home of the Sleep Out. We serve 8 western suburban Hennepin communities. I thought really that I was in the wrong committee, because I think this bill belongs in the Commerce and Labor Committee. Really, this is a jobs bill. That's what it's about. These economic times, we're all aware of those needs. The $30 million we're talking about here would create 1,230 jobs during the year of construction while we're building 1,200 housing units. So I think that leverage is to me the most important part of this bill. You see, we're building an affordable project in Wayzata right now. It's a small project, and so we engage volunteers in the developing of this affordable housing project. Usually when we're engaging volunteers, we have to be concerned about the quality of the volunteer work. In this climate, we have very skilled construction workers coming forward to volunteer, calling us because they want something to do during the day. And a lot of them are very asked about the lunch and whether we provide that or not, which we do. So times are hard for those folks, and we are getting a very skilled volunteer workforce. But at the same time, these people are giving up their well-paying jobs to volunteer on our project. We all know that housing was the impetus for the economic collapse affecting us all. And until we fix housing, we won't return from the brink of this collapse. I just wanted to share a few facts. Recently, there was a federal congressional hearing of the Banking and Financing Committee held here on January 23rd. The increase in foreclosures over the last year from 2008 to 2009 was 56% in Minnesota. I mean, Hennepin County alone, 2,200 foreclosures in 4 years. This is 4% of the total housing stock in the county. Staggering numbers. I think it's important to note that 60% of the foreclosed units in Minneapolis and St. Paul were rental units. So we're not just talking about homeowners here losing their homes. People are losing their affordable rental housing. And well, the last statistic I'll share is that there were only 44 affordable units available for every 100 households who are at or below 30% of the area median income. So in these times of crisis, I think we need to do something to jumpstart this industry, to return the economy for all of us. I think this creative approach is something we salute, and I support it as a measure to really get this housing industry back on its feet and keep it from falling even further. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Oh, okay, there's another testifier, and then, great. And then we'll see if there are questions from committee members. Representative Morgan?
I guess, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for either of those first two testifiers, in your estimation, how quickly could we get $30 million into the pipeline? I heard Mr. Voss say a little over 1,200 jobs, 1,200 housing units. What would the timeline over which that all would be realized? Would it be within a year? Would it be within 3 to 5 years? What's your estimation of that?
Alan Arthur again from Aon. I think the bulk of it would get in place in the next year. I don't have the exact numbers. We could probably figure that out almost to, you know, very, very easily. But the bulk of it would be, I'd say 75% of it within the year.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kyle Makarios. I'm a political director for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, and have the honor every day, I guess, but particularly right now, of representing about 1,800 unemployed carpenters, floor covers, millwrights, pile drivers, and lathers, members who, frankly, we wish didn't have quite so much time to be volunteering on these worthy projects. Because they were busy working. Many of you saw hundreds of our members the other day at the Capitol last week, just across the street, and hopefully witnessed some of the passion that they are feeling and the intensity of this recession that the construction industry is going through. We're 25% unemployed in the construction industry in Minnesota. Our members are facing great struggles, and we appreciate all of the efforts, including yours, Madam Chair, to figure out ways to get the construction industry moving again. And we've heard a lot from Mr. Voss, Mr. Arthur, about the need for these projects, the need to do affordable housing, and the number of jobs and projects that are ready to go in the pipeline. I just want to briefly say, Madam Chair, there are two reasons why the Carpenters Union supports this bill and this approach. And why we appreciate the opportunity today. One is that housing is a great way to create jobs. It's more work intensive than other projects. Different types of projects that the state is involved in require more work hours per dollar than others. Housing is high on that list. It is very time intensive rather than material intensive. We put a lot of members to work. And secondly, unlike many of the GO bond projects that the governor approved yesterday, which of course we're happy to begin building as soon as possible, but unlike many of those projects, with these dollars, one state dollar, as Mr. Arthur mentioned, leverages significant outside resources, including private investment. And so, unlike and some of the GO bond projects, obviously leverage other dollars as well, but many of them are $1 of state money equals $1 of construction spending, whereas these housing projects tend to be $1 of state money, $6 of private investment, or $7 cumulatively of construction spending. It's a great way to put more of our members and other unemployed construction workers to work per dollar. So we appreciate what you're trying to do here, Madam Chair, and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Makarios. Are there any questions from committee members for any of the witnesses? Representative Powles.
Yeah, I've got a lot, but I'll try to narrow it down. I'm going to ask you a real tough question to start out with, probably the first guy that testified. Everything you said makes sense, and I tend to agree with you, but I represent Walker, Minnesota, Cass, Hubbard, and Crow Wing counties, everything between Bemidji and Brainerd. I've got folks working three jobs, trying to make ends meet. Some have taken pay cuts. Hours are less. They're struggling. And I have friends that are this close to losing their home. They're behind. Their name is in the newspaper now because they're behind in their taxes. In voting for this and knowing that it's going to cost taxpayers of Minnesota something somewhere. What do I say to them when we do this and they know that they can't quite make it, and but they're not eligible? Just give me something that I can say to them, and then I'll give you an easier question next.
Mr. Arthur.
Madam Chair, Committee Member House, I don't know that I have a specific answer to you. It's a good question. If I knew more about their situation, though, I certainly would have a lot of contacts and resources that they could grab a hold of in our affordable housing community. It may not be this particular funding or legislation, but there are other programs out there. And we've tried to build, I think, in our communities a continuum of resources for a wide range of folks in the affordable housing world and who need that kind of help. So if you or your constituent or your friend contacted me, I can put them in touch with folks who perhaps can help them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem is they would probably be considered lower middle class or middle class, and the nation's economy is going to put them in a position where they will call you or need you. They don't need you now, and they probably won't need you 6 months from now, and I hope they don't need you a year from now. I hope it changes, but that's my dilemma. I have a nice area to represent. I have some of the most expensive homes in the district and some of the dirt cheapest, and Representative Saylor will testify to that, that I have the full gamut, and I have to represent them all equally. But getting back to getting this on the ground, I guess I wasn't understanding if this was a $30 million bonding bill. Is this something that would be let right away and put into the pipeline and these jobs would happen? But if that's true, then, Kyle, you know, and I'm just calling you Kyle because I'm not going to mess up your last name. It's going to take a long time to get these going. We know that. But have we? I remember last year testifying here or questioning, I believe, city folks were up here. When are we going to get to the point where affordable housing, we're going to get the municipalities to lower the permit price, tell the developers you don't have to plant 80 trees that are 3 inches in size, you don't have to put in a 5-foot sidewalk, you can put in a 3-foot sidewalk. When are we going to actually make them affordable? Because you go anywhere in Minneapolis or St. Paul and look at low-income housing, there are all these other things the cities are forcing developers to do. It's enormous, the price tag in the end. And if we don't, as the state, say to cities, municipalities, we're going to help you with low-income housing, we're going to give you some money to create some jobs and stir the economy, but we don't want you to put all these restrictions on. We want you to lower the permit fees. And why can't you get your carpenters and the rest of the labor unions and everybody else involved with this also and really make a push? Now would be a good time with Ryback, he's running for governor, to push him to lower some of these. So I would encourage you to do that, because affordable housing is not affordable housing when you add all these things. You don't have to answer that, but you know it takes a long time to get permits and get people to work.
Mr. Makarios, did you want
to answer? I'd love to, Madam Chair, respond to one of the small pieces that Representative House brings, which is, you're absolutely right, Representative House. I mean, clearly, we put the money out there. People like Mr. Arthur have to put together development deals. Takes some time, but I'm going to tell you that the construction forecast for Minnesota is not pretty. And we'll gladly build $686 million worth of construction projects that the state is doing over the next couple of years, and the housing projects that people have been able to put together through the resources. But we were talking about this before the committee. Our expectation is that this year will be at least as bad as last year. And then there's really nothing looking forward to next year, 2011, that looks much better. So I think it's incredibly important that we do these projects, even if they don't start right away, because we're going to need the work in 6 months or 9 months or a year when these projects do get in the ground.
Mr. Arthur?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Committee Member House. Again, the projects on these lists are in the hopper. So they are not only dreams in people's heads, they've been planned. Some funding on many of them has already been raised, significant funding. Now it needs the gap filled from different sources. And so I don't know, you know, the intimate details. Whoops, I'm not even showing you the map, am I? I don't know the intimate details of each of these projects, but I would say most of them are probably approved by their cities. and by their municipalities, et cetera. So they're ready to go, and they just need to have the gap filled so they can move forward.
Representative Benson?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Howes knows this too, but I thought it might be useful to restate it. When we use some government funds to stimulate the economy in a time like this, it does lead to auxiliary investments. And so if these carpenters and others have a job and they get a paycheck, they're going to go into that local grocery store and spend. They're going to buy things. They're going to go buy clothing for their kids and all the other kinds of things which stimulate the general economy. So I guess it's a philosophical thing whether you think in time of recession or depression there is a role for government to stimulate the economy in the short run. I happen to think there is. I think the evidence from the 1930s was that an economy doesn't necessarily ever go back to full employment. It can reach an equilibrium in which 10-20% of a population are continually unemployed. And, as they said, eventually maybe the economy will turn around, but people eat every day. So I think, at least when I support programs like this, I see them as temporary, as pump priming, and hopefully then the private economy will come back in and make those investments, and consumers will again be able to spend, and then the role of government diminishes as it ought to. But right now, I think it's justified. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Sure, Representative Howes.
He kind of drew the conservative Republican out of me. He should have left the beast quiet, but maybe I'm the opposite of Rukavina, but I like what these guys are doing. That's the liberal moderate side of me.
Yeah.
But you can't forget that for every dollar we use to do these wonderful projects is a dollar we take away from the people. We always forget, at least I do, that government doesn't make a product that we sell. We are not the Red Wing Shoe Company where we could hire a bunch of people, create jobs, and sell the shoes. That would be awesome. Maybe we should do that. I don't know. Maybe we should manufacture cars. We probably would mess that up too. But that's the problem. We're doing this, which is good, but we're not creating anything that the state then sells and gets. We're getting such a small amount back. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to. That's my dilemma. It's difficult to weigh the two.
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So we could carry on this discussion, but making these investments actually does create wealth. The funding that Representative Clark is proposing here, and especially the amendment, is really taking funds from those that have already basically been appropriated. So I'm not seeing it necessarily as a new tax, which is going to come out of people's pockets at all. And so, am I incorrect in that view?
You're correct, Representative Benson. We're talking about appropriated dollars. And I think the only thing I would add is, in the next legislative session, there's no guarantee if we don't somehow make a commitment this legislative session that there will be ongoing appropriated dollars. And that's some of what is driving me to try to deal with the crisis that has been discussed and the opportunity that has been discussed, Representative Benson. So I appreciate it. I think you've spoke that very well. Representative Hayden.
Thank you. I just have a couple of comments, and then I'm really interested as the agency comes up to kind of talk about what they think about it. But I guess the one thing that I was thinking about Representative Howes and what he said was that often when things don't go well in other parts of the state and people aren't working, and people unfortunately lose their house or they lose their job, and then the onset of kind of mental health and other behavioral issues come, those folks end up in the metro area, and they end up like the gentleman that Mr. Arthur talked about, that for whatever reason spiral down and spiral out and need a place to stay and need some help in terms of their care, and we've kind of talked about those issues in other venues with our general assistance Medicare. And so I think that one of the things that I like to think about is that our responsibility to kind of help folks get back on their feet. And so the jobs component is, you know, an important consideration. But the other consideration, as I've worked on these projects and have worked with people who live in these projects, is that in these units, is that helping people find a place to live is usually kind of the first step to their recovery to get back to a place in which they can be productive members of society. And so, to that end, I want us to always kind of keep that in mind. That, frankly, Representative Howes, what I would tell your constituent is that if the unfortunate nature that they get to a point where they need some help, that we would be there for them, and that we have been there for them and their brothers and their sisters, and will continue to do so. And these bonds, beyond all of the other things that they help people with, they do help people fundamentally kind of stabilize and then hopefully start the road to recovery.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up? Yes. Okay.
I just wanted to piggyback on what Representative Hayden said, because when people lose their homes, there's also a cost to the society. We're having to provide health care, food, shelter, all these other things. So that part of the equation has to be always kept in mind, too. And that's a definite expense. I've always thought of welfare as simply a subsidy for businesses who are unable to pay a living wage. That's really what the state is having to do here. If everyone could be engaged in a living wage, we could eliminate 80-90% of all welfare. And in times like these, those costs to the counties, to the state, escalate dramatically. So if we can find a way to provide people with work, we're not having to provide welfare. And I think of the 1930s, you know, and under the Roosevelt administration, the idea was we're going to find jobs. We do not want to just give money to people. We want them to do something in return. And this is an opportunity to do that.
Okay. Representative Lane, let me ask, are there others in the audience also who want to testify in favor of the bill? Just want to make sure I don't miss anybody. Yes? Okay. Representative Lane, do you want to ask of these three witnesses to start?
Just a quick comment in this discussion Okay. We've been having. I definitely am socially liberal, but I do have a fiscally conservative element in me, and I just would throw out that although some of the funds now, we may actually have them, but over 20 years, we will be continuing to seek those funds from the taxpayers.
Let's see, I believe I have Representative Morgan and Representative Severson. There is one more person who wants to testify in support of the bill. I do want to have a chance to hear from those who would oppose the bill. Would you mind if we hear the other person, Representative Morgan, Representative Severson, then come back to you?
I'd be fine.
Okay. Is there just one person? Okay. Why don't you come down? It looks like it's Mr. Dahl. Anybody else? Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with HomeLine. We help tenants across the state with issues to, and they're maintaining their affordable housing. And I have to say, I'm not quite certain if the funds that you're trying to make available through bonding in the Challenge Program can be used to address some of the cuts that have gone through, both on the Governor, House, and Senate have cut funds to the PARIF program, which are often used to rehab privately owned but publicly subsidized housing, where tenants who have a low-income subsidy are renting in the private market. And right now we have a tremendous backlog of units that are in need of repair. And I think there are a couple of reasons why we should try to keep the housing that we have and as good as quality as we can. And I hope that this bonding proposal would help accomplish that. Number one, low-income housing advocates hate it when the housing that we're building isn't welcome in the community. And we have a lot of deteriorating housing stock that PARA funds are used to actually help keep up for the tenants that are living there. And also, in testimony, I forget if it was here or in the Senate, we heard from MHFA that there are units that are at risk of being lost if we don't invest in them right now. And that wouldn't just be the loss of the units, but potentially Section 8 subsidies are, that are available to low-income tenants. And I just hope that we take a look at how we keep what we currently have, and this, if that would be an eligible usage of some of the funds that you're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just say, at least from the author, I certainly have that intention. And hopefully that's the flexibility of some of the funds that are there. I think we had Representative Rosenthal, Representative Severson, and I would like to have the agency come down. Actually, not just the agency. Is there anybody, how many people in the audience would like to testify against this proposal? Can I see? I'm assuming the agency, but maybe not. Is there anybody in the agency who wants to testify against this proposal? Okay, at this point, sure. Representative McNamara?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm not as curious to know if the agency wants to testify for or against the bill, but I would like to hear how they're going to administer their program, what the effects on the agency are going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to do them as well. So Representative Rosenthal and Representative Severson, you had some questions, and why don't we... I'm sorry, it was Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make sure that we, A, heard from the agency and also heard from people who were opposed to the bill.
Yes.
Thank you for calling on them. Thank you.
Representative Severson?
Same, Madam Chair.
Okay, good. So why don't we start with the agency, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and again, if anybody else is feeling shy, you're welcome to come down. What I'm really hoping, members, is that this committee will get united around a creative proposal. Because I think it's clear that we, you know, it's possible we can pass this legislation. I think it should be a bipartisan effort that we then hopefully convince our governor to sign as well. So I'm, you know, inviting you all and kind of challenge us all to try to figure out how to work together on this. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. I'd be happy to answer any questions members might have.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Orr, thank you for coming down. If this bill becomes law, it will free up, it will make available the opportunity to do $30 million in housing bonding. I asked a group of testifiers earlier how quickly they felt that could get into play, get to work with that money, creating the jobs, building the housing units. What is your sense of how quickly this could get people into new homes, affordable homes, and get people back to work?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I can't give you a precise answer. I can tell you that typically it's about, on rental housing projects, it's about 18 months from the time that we make a commitment to the time that the loan is closed. Typically, when we have money available, we make it available through a competitive process. And so that means that there would be some time to develop an RFP and then have time for people to respond to the RFP and then for us to review it. We have an RFP going out at the end of August or the end of April with applications due mid-summer. And recommendations taken to the board in October. So if this were acted on quickly, we could include the possibility of the bond proceeds in that RFP, which would mean it would recommendations would go to the board in October, and then typically it could be as much as 18 months.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next question I have is, in order to finance these bonds, this $30 million in bonds, if you were to let the full $30 million, it's estimated anywhere between $2 and $2.4 million a year in debt service. Mm-hmm. Over the lifetime of the bonds, that would be anywhere from $40 to $45 million. How do you see that debt service coming out of your agency's pot of money impacting over those 20 years what your agency can do? And I'd ask you to consider that in light of what we appear to be facing in the next biennium as we come back with a projected budget deficit that is very large.
Madam Chair,
Representative
Morgan, I'm really struggling with how we would issue bonds where only the 2 years, this biennium's appropriations could be pledged. We would not, we don't have, under normal circumstances, we have an expectation but not a legal, there's no legal obligation for the legislature to fund anything of the Housing Finance Agency after the, you know, the beyond the biennium that they're in, unless you've appropriated, made a standing appropriation. So so it would be, we wouldn't have anything to pledge to the bondholders after the end of this biennium at this point. Unless the original bill, as I read it, had a standing appropriation, and that we could go forward with. I don't believe that there would be much of a market for 20-year bonds where we could say, we've got the money for the first year, but we don't have money going forward. Investors are not unaware of the various states' budget situations. So the fact that we're facing a deficit is something that they would be aware of and would take into consideration. I just don't believe, and I made a quick phone call to see if what people in our finance department think, and they didn't think there would be any market.
Ms. Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more follow-up, Ms. Orr. Do you think, I talked about the timeline and you talked about the RFP and then approximately an 18-month lag after that. It seems to me the idea behind doing this is to get more money into the system now when we need not only housing for folks but jobs. Of course, there is a long-term cost to that, meaning there would be less money of what is currently allocated for the budget of MHFA. I guess I'm trying to ask you a philosophical question. I'm struggling with this, mm-hmm. and I'm asking for your help, being in the position that you are. Do you see this as a worthwhile trade-off, considering the times we are in now, to get this money in up front for the jobs and the housing we need now, even if it means a long-term drawdown of the funds available to your agency?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, we had a similar conversation in a committee when we were talking about the bonding bill. And at that point, I testified that I didn't think that it was a good trade-off. I was reluctant to recommend that trade-off. It's 20 years of a loss of base funding, particularly when we're facing what we know will be, I think, realistically, further decreases in funding. Given the fact that that housing doesn't happen overnight, I think that we're not, I just think it's unlikely that we're going to be able to push through $30 million worth of projects in the next year. And the trade-off is that we have given up base money for 20 years. It's hard without knowing. We don't keep a waiting list, so I can't tell you sort of what's in the queue and how close they are. And I have to say that I have in the past asserted, oh, we can get something done really quickly, and we haven't been able to for a variety of reasons, some of which could have been the agency contributed to, but some of which were things out of everybody's control. So I'm reluctant to say, I know that we can get X amount done. We did just fund stimulus money for tax credit projects for rental housing for low and moderate income households, and we just funded about $78 million worth of federal stimulus money to get tax credit projects going. those are projects that had been vetted by the agency, had been through the agency's underwriting project, and were stalled because we couldn't, the tax credits weren't selling for a high enough price, and we didn't have the deferred loan money to make up for it. The federal stimulus money did that. Those projects, most of that money was awarded in August. People are working on those projects, but we don't have, those projects aren't under construction, all of them. And so I have to use that as a, here are projects that we've already seen. And, you know, you don't do your final architectural drawings and things like that until you have your money in hand, because you don't want to spend any more money until you know you have your project going forward. So I just think it's the reality that we can't turn this around overnight. There are some things that we can do very quickly. I would hope that we could do some of the acquisition rehab of foreclosed properties quite quickly. Some of the projects will just take a longer time. One of the issues always is the agency's money is not the only money in a deal. We often have 10 or 12 in a rental housing project. We often have 10 or 12 sources of funding. That takes a long time to put together, and it takes a long time even once you have everybody committed to work through what are the issues, how do we deal with, you know, who's in first position and what are those requirements, and so all of those things need to be worked through. Everybody is committed to trying to move affordable housing projects along as quickly as possible. I just don't want to overpromise.
Let's see, I have a list here. I believe Representative Severson was next, then I have McNamara, Benson, Saylor. And I just want to make one comment, which is my understanding is there are 4 years to sell these bonds. They're not required to be sold in a year or two. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Warren. I think one of the things I think we as a committee need to understand as well, because it's brought up here, that we are obligating future legislatures to the debt service on this based on a challenge fund, which is currently being funded by a governor who has been very friendly, in fact, had a goal to end long-term homelessness and has had an aggressive program in the past, and I think continues to be committed. But we're having a new governor this next biennium. Whether it's the left side of the aisle or the right side of the aisle, it really doesn't matter. It matters what that particular governor is going to deem important on his budgetary constraints. So we're obligating Minnesota Housing Finance Agency with a debt through this challenge fund that may not be looked on favorably in the future. So that's one of the concerns that I have initially. The other is that based on that, I think when Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and Commissioner Warrior, you can probably speak to this, when you put together the description of these bonds, that would be a disclaimer that would necessarily be put on the bonds to be let. Is that right or not?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, we do in the official statement have to disclose everything. We have to disclose everything. And one of the things investors would look at is how are you going to pay us back over the next 20 years? You know, the state, when it issues GO bonds, pledges the full faith and credit of the state and says, you know, if we don't have monies in our coffer, we'll raise taxes. That's the pledge that goes with the general obligation. The nonprofit housing bonds that we were authorized to issue a couple of years ago, the legislature made a standing appropriation for 22 years for those bonds so we could pledge that. Typically, as you know, most of the agency's budget is first-time homebuyer mortgage assistance. That's funded through mortgage revenue bonds, tax-exempt bonds. They're revenue bonds, and what we pledge to the investors is that we will collect mortgage payments for the homeowners, and we will use that money to pay back the bonds. So we would have to disclose that at this point we have an appropriation for 2 years, but we don't have an appropriation beyond that.
And just to follow up to that, Madam Chair.
Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, we are obligating, and my understanding would be for a $30 million bond let on this would be $2.4 million for the next year to obligate. We would have to set those monies aside in order to ensure that there are the monies there to obligate these bonds to service the debt, so those monies would not be able to be used currently and would be obligated. And if there were no bond buyers available to take that risk, that money would sit static and would not be able to be utilized. Would that be accurate?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, I just saw the bill was just introduced yesterday, and I just got the amendment this morning. But my understanding is the mechanism is that if we issued bonds, we would certify how much debt service we needed, and then that would be transferred. And so if we were not able to issue any bonds, then I believe the money would still stay in the challenge program. But as I said, I haven't had a lot of time to absorb this, but that's how my initial reading is that it would work. So the money wouldn't have to sit there. But we are talking about just whatever's left in the challenge program for FY10 and then the appropriation for FY11. So it's just through July of 11, I guess.
11, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Representative McNamara.
Just a real quick, short one. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Orr, I just wanted to clarify. Representative Benson had earlier said this is paid for, but then you said nothing would probably happen for 18 months. Does that actually mean that none of these bonds have any way at this time to be paid for?
Sir?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I think that there are two questions there. The question about how they're paid for is, as my understanding, right now it's the appropriation that's made to the challenge program, and it's authorizing the use of that appropriation to pay the debt service on these bonds. That appropriation is only through, you appropriate on a biennial basis, so we have an appropriation through fiscal year 11, but we don't have anything else at this point. So we couldn't say to bondholders, we have something beyond 1 year. The question of when the projects get going is a different question. We, at least our practice has been to not issue bonds until the projects need the money. So we could commit the resources, but we wouldn't necessarily issue the bonds until the projects were close to closing, so that we don't incur any unnecessary debt service. And in fact, if we can, we try and organize things so that a number of projects would close right around the same time so we could have a bigger bond issue, because it costs us money to issue bonds. I mean, you've got legal fees, other things. And so we don't want to have a $3 million bond issue 1 month and then a $5 million bond issue the next month. We try and get as many projects to get to the point of closing as possible so that we could have a bigger bond issue. But it's likely that if we're talking about rental projects of any size, that it could take, as I said, it's not unusual for it to take up to 18 months from the time of commitment to closing.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just curious, if the set aside funds were unused for debt service, would that stay in the challenge program, or could it be used for projects, or would it be permanently set aside for the bonding projects only?
Madam Chair, Representative Saylor, again, as I read the amendment, the money is in the challenge fund until we certify that we need debt service, and then it's transferred. That's how I read it. I don't know if that was the intention, and I don't know if I'm reading it correctly, but that's how I understand it. The question about the out years is you would have to do this every 2 years. You would need to have this provision apply to every appropriation to the challenge fund until the bonds are paid off.
Okay, Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Orr, I just had a couple of quick questions. One was that you said that the agency, I guess I'm trying to get around now a little bit, the agency didn't have a waiting list per se, but then Mr. Arthur and then along with MHP and MCD has kind of provided us with a pipeline, which kind of looks like a waiting list. And then you had also said that there was a bunch of projects that had been vetted through the process, and you got those funded through AIR funds on the tax credit. So I'm a little confused about kind of this idea that there are these, you know, quote-unquote shovel-ready projects, are these projects that are pretty close to being developed. And can you just talk a little more? I mean, it sounds like the agency doesn't have a formal list that says, here's all the projects. But it does sound like that we know somewhat what is close to being developed and would be ready to move.
So, Madam Chair, yes, Representative Hayden, we generally make money available on a competitive basis. We have, in the last couple of years, because of the funding levels, we have only had one funding round a year. And we have made an effort, which isn't always successful, to when a project comes in and we think it's ready to go and it fits our priorities, we try and get it to the point where it's done. It doesn't have to come back to us for more money. But that doesn't always work out because we don't always have enough money, or, you know, things change, and so they may need to come back. So ideally, the project applies once to the agency for money. We're the gap. We fill the gaps, and then it's ready to proceed. There are some cases, for instance, Cedar Riverside, or I think it's called Riverside Plaza now. Big project, 1,300 units. Half of them are Section 8. It has major systems problems. 1,300 units takes a lot of money to fix these major systems problems. In this last funding round, we committed, I think, about $4 million. They have a number of funding sources. That $4 million doesn't close the gap. So they'll be back to ask for more money. So in some cases, when we know they have that the gap isn't closed and there isn't any other funding source, you could say sort of that's a waiting list. But usually what we say to a project is, this is all we've got for this project. If you still have a gap, you have to go back. You have to go out and find the rest of the gap. But as I said, our approach is to try and fill the gap so that the projects can go forward. And I honestly don't know how many projects we have that we know are only partially funded. But that would be the closest there would be to a waiting list. It's not substantial. And you would generally have to come back in and apply on a competitive basis again.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
So I guess what I'm struggling with is that I recognize Chair Clark's, you know, and I kind of feel the same way, this idea that we're in really tough times, and that if we're able to try to get as much money on the street as soon as possible, not only would that do the great things as creating jobs and the leverage that comes with it, it would also help, quite frankly, the governor's plan to end long-term homelessness and create more units there. And it all comes with the price, which we're kind of looking at. So I think what I'm trying to figure out is that in these times, if we don't do this, should we just kind of wait? And because we kind of know the future a little bit in terms of our budget deficit, but should we wait to figure out if that just gets whittled away? I'm concerned about some of your other pots of money, like, you know, the Housing Trust Fund, which we've avoided, which provides rental subsidy for homeless and low-income people and others. I think you guys did a good job. I mean, unfortunately, had to take the money from PERF, and we didn't get the bonds from the governor. But I guess I'm a little interested, and I don't want to put you on the spot, so if you don't have kind of don't feel comfortable in saying that. I totally understand. But I'm also looking, I guess, for other creative ideas or maybe just some sense of where the agency thinks we should go if it looks like this is not a good idea, not because we don't want to put more affordable housing, but the mechanism and the funding and all of that doesn't really work very well in terms of the way that you look at things, then what are the things that we can do to try to preserve and build and rehab affordable housing in this state?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I think that, well, there's always room for improvement. I think the agency is fairly adept at maximizing the existing resources. So one of the things that, as I said, we have an RFP going out in April. One of the things we talked about in the last couple of weeks is we're not going to leave a single dollar of federal tax credits on the table. So that means that projects that aren't eligible, don't work with tax credits, probably aren't going to get funded, because tax credit projects, given the current market and given who we're trying to serve with them, need some deferred money. So we will prioritize the deferred money because it will stretch further if we can bring in the federal tax credits, that private investment. So there are a number of strategies like that. The PARIF program is another good example of stretching resources as far as possible. We don't want to lose any Section 8 federal, we don't want to lose the housing, we don't want to lose the federal resources. And so we have a separate program for the preservation of federally assisted housing, and we continue to have, that is a program that in the past we've tried to protect as much as possible. We have been, I think the Department of Commerce might say, we have been a pest about getting, trying to get access for rental housing projects to the weatherization money, the federal weatherization money. There's 13 times as much federal weatherization money available in this state as there ever has been. And we have been relentless in working with the Department of Commerce to access that money. We have a number of buildings that now finally the federal government has sent the list of deemed projects eligible for weatherization. Those are Section 8 projects for the most part. If we can use those federal dollars, then that means the PARIF dollars will stretch further. So we are trying to turn over every stone possible. And I think that that is the wave of the future. I think that we will be, I mean, we're already, we work with the Department of Health. We get money for radon kits that go, that are coupled with our rehab loan program. So I think that we're going to more and more have to be creative about making those connections between housing and energy conservation, housing and education, housing and transportation. And with that comes sometimes little, sometimes big pots of money that we have to access. It's a good thing to make those connections. We should be making those connections anyhow. But the funding situation sort of makes it more imperative. We will do the best we can to stretch the money that we have. One of the things, as you know, that we've done with the tax credit program is, as part of the plan to end long-term homelessness, we put a priority in the tax credit program for projects that have some long-term homeless units. That wasn't happening in the tax credit program before we had that priority. Now, virtually any project that gets funded with tax credits has to have four units of long-term homeless. That is using private dollars and the federal subsidy to work on the plan to end long-term homelessness. That's, I think, an example of, you know, what some might call an aggressive. I mean, a lot of the, you know, developers would just as soon not. But they recognize that in order to access the money, they're going to have to do that. It allows for us not only to serve those people, but serve them in a community as opposed to being segregated in. So there are lots of benefits. Those are the sorts of things that we will continue to explore as much as possible. I think that next year more so than this year, but we have been more in an environment of trying to make the best of what we have than we've been in an environment of abundance. And we will continue to try and do as much as we possibly can with the resources that are available.
Just my own follow-up to that question. I know that there's been concern about specifically pegging this to the challenge fund as a source of the appropriated dollar. So I realize that you have an administration that you're working for that may not agree with some of the things that you might consider, but I'm just also want to invite you, I guess, to think about if there are other ways or other sources of funding within the agency that you think might be appropriate for this bonding source. This amendment can be amended to include other sources of the appropriated dollars. So I don't know if you right now have thought of that, but I'd like to encourage you to think about that. I think we're somewhat flexible. Right now, one of the things we liked about the challenge fund is the flexibility it has. It could still be pegged to the flexibility of the challenge fund. And I think there was a question that was asked earlier about whether or not PARIF would be able to be used. And I think you partially talked about stretching PARIF dollars in other ways with weatherization funds, but I'm not sure that you answered the question that was raised a little bit earlier about how this might be a fund that would help PARIF. And so if you could answer that and anything else you'd care to add about the question I'm asking underlying that.
Madam Chair, I thought that you answered the question that it was your intention that that the monies could be used for things like preservation. There's nothing in the statute, in the challenge program statute, that would prohibit that. And it was helpful to, the more that we hear about what your intentions are, the better, so that we can make sure that we use the money consistent with the legislative intent.
Okay. Do you? And my underlying question was, do you have some thoughts about other sources of appropriated dollars? That would be, and you don't have to answer today, but if you would consider that, and if you do have some thoughts about it right now, I would be glad to hear them.
I don't really. Okay. I'd be happy to think about it.
Okay. Representative Benson, I think you'll have the final question. I want to thank committee members. Let me just say one thing. We've gone over. We have a hearing tomorrow, and we have a bill up, but I think when we're done with that bill, we'll take some more time if need be, and then we're just going to take what we need to do in order to have this discussion and hopefully have some consensus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence. I had constituents who called me out in the hall, so if I ask a question which has already been discussed, you will correct me quickly, hopefully. When Representative Morgan was talking about the difficulty of the long-term funding of this, you said, it's only could go for about a year. Before I left, you were discussing the use of federal stimulus money, and that was a good thing to hear how many of these projects now will be able to go forward. While you were doing all that, were you saying with your colleagues or discussing an idea that, boy, if there were a little more, we could have done 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 more if there had been additional funding from? And I only ask that because with this particular bill, it authorizes the letting of bonds, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the department would have to actually somehow sell them all. What if the department had access to these and was able to sell $5 million worth or $10 million because during the year you would be able to get projects which you had to put on the shelf and now could move forward? Is that a reasonable possibility?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, so committee members, thank you very much for a thoughtful discussion. Representative McNamara has been looking at the minutes, I can tell, and he'd like to approve the minutes from Tuesday, March 9th and Wednesday, March 10th.
I'll move both of those minutes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative McNamara, any discussion? Not all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion is adopted. The meeting is adjourned, and we'll meet again here tomorrow.